person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, you! Come out here on the floor. Let's rock some more. Come out of here on the floor. And let's rock some more, yeah. Now when you get out here, don't you have no fear. Put your hands on your hip, let your backbone slip and work out.
Sid Fernando with us, the sort of a kind of a quick hit for Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillandale. Sid's got to head out at the bottom of the hour, and actually we got Bo Bromagen lined up as well, and his time is kind of locked in. So I'll say good morning, Sid.
Good morning, Steve.
Quick couple of lightning round topics. Timberlake comes back a winner and kicks off his three-year-old season successfully. We had got a son of Mineshaft, a veteran son of Mineshaft, in Senior Buscador, who wins a big international event that garners attention, and whatever else is on your
radar. Well, I'll tell you what about the Timberlake. I direct everybody to go to the Substack, because Francis just posted a very, very detailed account of his female family, which traces back to some a major Aga Khan family. You know, it's very much Into Mischievous Sire has been bred to, you know, more staying type of horses. And so this is another one. He's already had two Derby winners in Mandaloon and Authentic. This horse is similar profile, bred to a staying line, and Into Mischief has shown that he can take those staying lines and have his horses carry that speed. So I would recommend looking at that post. It just came out about a half hour ago. As far as Senior Buscador, Joey Peacock contacted me, so we probably going to write a post on him as well. Interesting horse. Mineshaft obviously is an aged stallion, but extremely well bred. It's funny because Chuck Pipke called me last night. He wants to send a mare to Mineshaft after this Buscador thing. So you see how even an old stallion can benefit. But it'll be interesting. This horse is a stud prospect, you know, from the AP Indy line, and he just won this huge race. So he's out of that really good mare. So there's a lot of possibilities with him as a stallion.
Well, you know, we had Todd Fincher on Monday, and it's just funny because that family, and you mentioned Rose's Desert, the New Mexico bred Peacock family, Fountainhead, essentially. I've been discussing her with Todd for years. It's a bizarre scenario. I mean, she was a terrific race mare, but. For her to produce this sequence of sons, in particular, she's got the one daughter, but the three sons, Runaway Ghost and Sheriff Brown, and now he's a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the three of them, they pretty much, their careers overlapped quite a bit, and it's remarkable. And, you know, I did bring up one thing with Todd, because he told us that she's going to Into Mischief. And she's, you know, it's funny, Sid, she's on a late cycle, dropping her foals in late April and early May.
Uh-huh.
And yet they've been able to basically keep her on that circle. So she's not due until April, but then she's going to go to Into Mischief. And you and I have discussed this. Sometimes a mare that is throwing and dropping real nice progeny with, sort of rank and file stallions, it doesn't really necessarily produce this, as successfully when they elevate, the alleged elevation of quality of stallion.
Well, hopefully that won't be the case.
Yet. No. I hope not. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, she's...
But you know what I'm driving at.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But she's just been a terrific broodmare, and he's a top stallion. And, it ties into the Timberlake, Again, another type of staying mare in his book. And he's shown that he's that quote-unquote trans-brilliant sire that Franco Varola wrote about. Transfers his innate speed with the stamina of the mare. And it's something to look forward to, but I definitely understand your point, no question about it.
Well, and to look at, we didn't get deep into Rose's Desert in terms of her page, but just notably, she's 4x5 with Raisin Native, and she's 3x4 with Blushing Groom. What's notable is that Desert God, her sire, son of Fappiano, first dam Blush with Pride by Blushing Groom, and the second dam was Best in Show.
Mm-hmm.
The great traffic judge mare. So even though Desert God isn't thought of widely and never never saw service outside of New Mexico, there was a lot there.
Yeah, huge family behind it, and certainly some of that quality has come out in her.
Well, and I bring up Best in Show, the second dam. I mean, she was a broodmare of the year.
Yeah, it's a terrific family. I mean, the number of stakes winners that trace to her, we couldn't count. It's such great horses. And the interesting thing is, with her, she's had similar the line. If you recall the stallion that stood in New York that Leo O'Brien won the Irish 2000 Guineas with, his son. What was that? What was the name?
Four Stars All Star.
Yeah, look at Four Stars All Star's sire. Like Desert God, he was not a racehorse, but he was from the same family of Best in Show.
How about you? Look at you're unbelievable. Hold on, okay, now you got me scurrying to pull up the wonderful old Four Stars All Star. Unbelievable. He was I love it. Well, now wait a minute. Was it Four Star Dave? Maybe then. Because it's not Four Stars All-Star. Hold on. Let me look at Four Star Dave then. Wait a minute. Because they were...
Was the full brother to El Gran Señor. Compliance.
Yes. Yeah, there we go.
And Compliance is from the Best in Show family.
Oh, okay. There it is. Yep. There it is. Yeah. Second in the same position, too. Second dam.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
A lot of these regional horses with this Best in Show end up producing something. Even though they themselves weren't racehorses.
Yeah, and the dam that for, and yeah, El Gran Señor, Try My Best as well.
Yeah,
Maryland based, bred by Frank by Mrs. Frank Forsyth, and then E.P. Taylor, and Winfield. Stolen Hour, right? Traffic Judge, and amazing.
Yeah.
How popular or how eager will people be to bring a senior Buscador, or is he more likely to be an international interested, to draw international interest instead?
Oh, I think there'll be interest here. Kind of ties in actually, even with the piece I did the other day about dominant sire lines. And so in this case, you have Seattle Slew, AP Indy, and then you have Mineshaft. Now, a lot of times you could have a sequence of powerful stallions, and then you have a not so powerful stallion, but he could be the catalyst for his son to be a bigger horse, you know? It happens. You know, if you look at Into Mischief, Stormcat, and it went to Harlan, who was hardly, you know, his best son, and Harlan got Harlan's Holiday, Into
right.
Mischief.
Right.
You know, so with that path in mind, and, you know, Joey Peacock actually responded to me when he read that article. So I'm thinking he's thinking the same thing. You know, you could have kind of a pause with Mineshaft and then have Senior Buscador as another stallion, and who knows what he could do. That kind of thinking, you know. So I'll talk to him. Perhaps we'll do a post on him.
Nice.
But, yeah. I mean, this horse did win this big race, and that counts for something.
Yeah, and not done. They'll press on to Maidan and see if he can't capitalize on two out of these three rich opportunities.
Yeah, and Miles Porter really should even be work out even better for him.
You know, although the one turn mile in the eighth, you know, the kind of pace that generates.
Oh, that's true too. Yeah.
Right. I mean, not that he won't put in a run, but because he always does. But he also seems to be in peak form, the best form of his career. You know, I'll pass along before we go, Sid. I'll pass a note that. Bubbled up today. Tisway apparently passed away in Turkey. Tisway at 19, I think I saw.
No.
Is that right?
I just said no to my dog.
Oh. Bad dog. Actually, more than, no, wait a minute. He's older than that. He's much older. He was foaled in 97. Yeah, so 27. Is that, 27. Tisnap. I was right the first time. Tisway was 19. I was right. That's right. I'm looking at the wrong date. And I didn't, you know, I didn't remember this. Mandy Pope bred Tisway.
Yeah, I didn't remember that either.
How about that? That one was a $140,000 Keeneland yearling.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? An early success, and of course Jimmy Bond, and oh my God, his big owner. What was his the nice owners that Jim had for years with him? Anyway, Sid, I know you got to go.
You got Bo coming up.
I do.
Let you go.
All right.
All right. Great.
Catch up next week. I'll see you next week.
Right, yeah, that's right.
Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And just got a note from Bo, so let's get to him. And we've got something exciting and upbeat, for starters, to discuss with Bo Bromigen, and that is this light-up racing concept. But first of all, let me say good morning, Bo Bromigen.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. We'll talk about light-up racing, but I delivered the sad news from over the weekend that circulated about Philip Oliver, and I would love for you to tell everybody about Phil, who didn't know him, if you don't mind.
Yeah, Phil. You know, I've known Phil for quite a while now. He was a great horseman and a good friend. He, you know, when I was coming up, obviously he was a little older than I was, but. The way that he treated me was, I couldn't appreciate it more. He was always very kind and respectful and tried to do what he could to help me learn the game. So, you know, I'll forever appreciate that.
And our thoughts, again, go out to Vicky and his siblings and his mother and everybody, all his friends, and he had a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Not at all. The light-up racing concept, Bo, is, and I didn't realize until I read up on it, the origin, the Australian origin, and this topic is visited on a regular basis. And in fact, just recently, last week, when Jim Gagliano visited, we talked about communications and outreach and, you know, the way in which the game and the industry is perceived outwardly. Talk a little bit about your involvement and the concept and the kickoff event on Monday and where it's everything is headed.
Yeah, so, you know, my involvement at this point is actually limited to just being somebody who signed up as a member. I don't have any kind of managerial role with this initiative, but, you know, my interest is there. I think there's an appetite, you know, among the industry here for some positive change and some a new way of kind of being able to effectively communicate, right? I think in years past we've seen that whatever we've done, whether it's leadership or just on an individual level, you know, doing our part to drive public opinion about our industry has kind of come up pretty short. So seeing a group of people like Jason Litt, Price Bell, Vicky, Dr. Burke come together here and create, or at least follow up on it, on a new way of doing things using social media, media training, et cetera, to kind of do what we can as an industry to kind of promote our sport in a positive way. I'm obviously, like I said, I'm very interested in that.
I do wonder, I mean, given your background and your immersion in the game, I mean, what form has critiques that need to be addressed, you know, from people that just don't understand the game or don't have proximity to horses? I mean, obviously in Kentucky and in certain markets, you know, there is more of an intimacy, you know, with the industry or with equine sport and agrarian life in general. What form have you seen it take any? Have you had, you know, people, uninitiated people, you know, ask you about the game?
Yeah, I think that's part of, you know, oftentimes, I guess when you're not involved in the sport on a very close level, a lot of the stuff that you will see are reposts or, you know, responses to stuff that comes out on social media and Twitter. And oftentimes when you try and respond to negative comments or questions on Twitter, you know, it feels like you're in a knife fight, but you're holding a styrofoam pool noodle. You know what I mean? There's no way to effectively challenge the previous existing sentiment. It's tough for what we would consider the leadership organizations that previously existed to kind of effectively communicate to, like I say, the people that are not in this industry. And I think that through social media and otherwise, we're going to have a greater reach.
Talk about Monday and the kickoff event and what form this is going to take. I am curious, too, you know, the origins in Australia. And that might be, you know, reserved for, you know, for other people more, you know, directly involved in the management and, you know, what is clearly a professional public relations agency, right, that is tied to this.
Yeah. So Vicky Leonard, who is a Kiwi living in Sydney, Australia, she did this basically in Australia as well. How do I put this? I think that she has really kind of shaped this initiative in a way that makes a lot of sense, but it's going to come down to the people involved. Like, it's not management. This is a grassroots kind of initiative that's going to require member participation. And I know that they encourage everybody to sign up, at least to get the information out there and use them as a resource for information and accuracy so they can teach people how to have difficult conversations and answer tough questions in transparent ways, and kind of in the efforts of accountability, I think. You know what I mean? So it isn't just the management over there that's kind of leading the charge. It'll be the members and the participants driving it.
We'll talk about the I'll give people, you know, directive toward the website in a minute, and we'll hit on some of the Q's and the A's. But I am curious, Bo, from your vantage point, as a bloodstock advisor and somebody that it races at a high level, what has been your reaction to or impressions of the existing public relations and interaction from the industry heretofore?
Frankly, it's been a little frustrating. Just maybe by the nature of the news business, I don't know. Oftentimes the stories that are coming out are just negative. And it's tough to kind of work in an industry where you know that there are so many positive influences and experiences to be had, just to see the negativity and nothing but is a frustrating deal. I know that maybe right or wrong, I expected some of the alphabet soup organizations that do exist to kind of to handle that a little bit better, the negativity. And it just, to me, it's come up short. So whatever, I think at some point you have to stop relying on everybody else to kind of do the job that you want done. And, you know, I'm kind of interested in this light up racing is that, like, you know, you can contribute to this effort on an individual level that is kind of effective in ways that organizationally may not be.
I'm going to ask you actually kind of a follow-up to a question that came up a few weeks ago. I made the point with Mike Rapoli, actually, when he visited. He asked me, you know, industry leadership, has done a good job? And it actually is as splintered a topic as the industry itself, and because I think that there's very good leadership in each of the various capacities. You know, the breeders look to a certain set of leader, for leadership from within their ranks. The horse players look for leadership from major players and people who speak from experience and authority, a Paul Matisse, people like that. The trainers, they look to others, within. Not everybody is a flag waver. So,
right, exactly. And I think also, obviously, this industry is in a position or a period of change, right? With this coming in, we're all adapting to a new way of living. Organized or leadership of, especially horse players, right? It's tough for all these people to find a common voice in the same way. It's tough for trainers to communicate with racetracks or regulators or whoever it is. And I think that comes down to, number one, transparency, right? Being able to understand what the actual facts are, what the information is real, addressing misinformation, and taking that and effectively communicate with one another in the industry, like the subcircles of this industry, the horse players, horsemen, the tracks. There, if we have the information and we can effectively communicate with one another, I think that you'll see a lot more, positive change and progress towards what we are trying to do and what might have already been done. I know we're starting to do that, right? There has been progress, but I don't think that that information has gotten out there as well as it could have.
And there's also, you know, there's also anybody that works in the, whether it's public relations or whether it's in advertising, the marketing of any entity, and we have a product, there has to be a consistent message. It can't be scattershot.
Exactly. If it's 100 voices in the room shouting different stuff, you can't hear anything anyway.
Exactly.
So kind of, you know, that's sort of the idea. And a big part of this light up racing is going to be media training and social media training, where, you know, obviously the tough questions have to be asked as part of the efforts of accountability and being able to answer those questions in a way that again, it's got to communicate facts and information that's reliable and accurate. And then answering those questions with some transparency would go a long way in my mind to doing what we want to do, I think.
Well, I'm going to put out the link to one tab within lightupracing.com's four or five different areas. There's Q&A. There's a Q&A section, which, you know, addresses the kinds of questions that industry stakeholders and horse players, casual fans, anybody may encounter. And, you know, being armed with answers and, you know, coherent, specific answers goes a long way. But when it comes to this particular tab, this PR hub, and you know, I came from Procter & Gamble and consumer package goods background. My brother is a Broadway press agent, and I'm very appreciative of this kind of a program. There is a section here that has not been produced within our shores, within American racing. There's a section, guides and webinars, the science of social change, six important concepts, communicating in a crisis, command the conversation, tips for effective media interviews, navigating opinions, horse racing on social media. I mean, communications research, utilizing successful approaches that have already been, you know, proven to work in other parts of the world, in other equine sport arenas. This is something that should be absolutely being trumpeted by the industry and put in everybody's hands.
Right. You know, I tell you, I could probably benefit some more media training myself. So I appreciate that these resources are available. You know, like I said, I think we all kind of, you know, whether we're billionaire owners or, you know, super trainers or whoever it is, I think we can all kind of benefit from being able to communicate a little bit better and sort of represent the industry in the best way that we can, however that is, you know what I mean? So obviously the resources made available just for instructional uses and so on is, I think, a big add.
Well, and I can think back, I mentioned Procter & Gamble, I can think back to a handheld card that we all got as young salesmen at Procter, which essentially was the, you know, the multiple step system of what was known as persuasive selling, and, you know, including features and benefits and then tying them to, you know, the customer and their decision making. All of that can be easily plugged into what we're facing. And I've wrote to you yesterday, where I said, you know, I'm surprised that we haven't had a chance and that haven't had a chance to, you know, either talk to Price Bell or to Jason Litt about this, but or some of the Australian, you know, the founders, but
right,
the you know, the decision to bring this here and to put these tools in the hands of you know, our interests, this is the kind of thing that is a path forward from what is essentially a miasma of confusion and angst.
That's kind of how I see it as well. I think that's exactly what kind of excites me about this idea.
Tell me about Monday. I saw that there was a big, you know, a well attended and
yeah, it was a great turnout. I was really encouraged by the amount of the attendance there. I think it does show the appetite for, you know, progress and some change here, and some empowerment, basically. You know, they went into depth about the science of social change, like you mentioned, and Vicky having, you know, worked with behavioral science scientists and social media experts in Australia. She really had it together, and I was impressed.
Well, I went back to November, actually, to find the initial press release about Light Up Racing is the entity that we're discussing. Bo Bromigen with us, lightupracing.com. They're also, of course, available to follow on Twitter. They've got 400 plus followers so far, and that should grow exponentially. But one of the things about this, and I knew right away when I saw the Australian, that there was an Australian, you know, taproot involved. It had to be because of the controversy around the Melbourne Cup. And, you know, a couple of years ago when you had three fatalities and it was an absolute, you know, disaster. And sure enough, I mean, that is the, you know, the origin. And there's a terrific quote in here from Vin Cox, the managing director of Godolphin Australia, and also the VRC, the Victorian Racing Club. The anti-racing groups are well-funded, well-organized, and have been allowed to shape the public narrative of our industry unopposed. And that isn't necessarily 100% true for us, because there's been excellent pushback in a lot of quarters to PETA and their like. But one of the problems, Bo, that we've got, except in places like Kentucky, because you do have some media outlets that think of the industry as low-hanging fruit, and that, you know, that we're easily attacked. One thing I would say is that in New York, we've been able to push the pendulum back in the other direction. There was a period where New York couldn't buy a break in terms of media perception.
Right.
And that has gone the other way, in part led by the State House and Governor Hochul, and basically, you know, she changed the narrative. We absolutely can win this battle by, you know, telling our story on any of the areas that we're being attacked.
Right. We're not trying to convert PETA members into racehorse owners. I mean, that'd be an absurd waste of time. But, you know, say what you will about them, they can effectively communicate whatever their position is, right? And it's not necessarily based on facts, but it's not necessarily not based on facts either. What's important is that we address the misinformation that is out there with facts and transparency. And in those efforts, you know, hold one another accountable, as well as leadership in this game. So, you know, Rapoli, I think, as outspoken as he is, you know, shook some trees and kind of lit some fires, kind of putting people on notice that things do need to change in certain ways. But I think that like a grassroots effort such as Light Up Racing is a more effective way than just, frankly, one guy on Twitter trying to fight the battle himself.
Well, and one commonality in these kinds of discussions and in these calls to action, it is the, you know, work together mantra, essentially, and even though here's a reminder that even though most decisions are driven by self-interest in this game, and whether it's financial or whether it's the idea of winning elusive prizes, it's driven by self-interest and personal pique, let's be honest.
And there are cases here where any single event is life-changing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you have such high purses and so on and so forth, you can bring a couple million dollars in the sales ring. This life-changing opportunity. So, you know, self-interest is obviously a strong driver here. I think that, you know, I don't want to generally over-characterize here, but I think that there is an appetite, especially for younger people in the generation, to absolutely work together in a more, organized way, organizationally driven way, for kind of common interests. I think we realize how interconnected this industry is. not to start a fight here with horse players, but I see that horse players are on Twitter talking about how nobody pays attention to them ever, right? They're the last people to eat. So I think that the younger crowd of this industry acknowledges how important they are. But like I say, without a kind of common voice, without an open discussion and that back and forth, it's tough to get on the same page.
Agreed. But at the heart of everybody's approach and decision making and communications, it needs to be the common good. I have taken to boiling it down to, you know, a simple, you know, the very simple and old tried and true mantra of being a good steward and just being.
Yeah, absolutely. I've talked to Jason Litt last night, you know, and he said something pretty clever. He said, look, we're here representing a breed that's been around for 300 years. You know, we are just stewards of this breed and this industry. And if we can get it from where we got it to when we pass it along, if we can improve it in any way, that I think we should. You know, it's kind of that a rising tide lifts all boats kind of idea.
Exactly. I was going to use that expression, actually, because it's really true. I mean, that if everybody on the breeding and sales side, and everybody on the track management, in every arena in which they compete and produce, if you take care of your end, we all benefit.
Yeah, exactly. And look, it's unrealistic to think or expect that we're going to just have some sort of complete overhaul of the industry. Like, we're going to flip the script and everybody's going to be smiling about horse racing. That's not what I think is reasonable. I think just the idea of just incremental improvements, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Just turning the tide a little bit. And I think that the kind of snowballs and keeps moving forward and stuff like that. It's just the small things that we can do make the biggest of difference, I think.
Well, it's the winning of hearts and minds, as they say.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and again, it having a professional approach, and that's what this is offering. And I'm going to send out a variety of links so that people can, you know, poke around. I imagine, just because I haven't seen as much. One of the reasons I reached out to you was, I saw that you had attended, and you were applauding the concept, and that was enough, you know, for me to say, let me get somebody like a Bo Bromagen on to talk about the virtues of this. So that was part of the motivation. I think more people, I think, Bo, because of some, you know, a lot of prior initiatives that people view as toothless, and no matter how well intentioned, there's this general expectation that this is yet another beautification project. This is not.
Yeah.
This is very different.
Yeah, I see what you mean 100%. And look, maybe that goes back to the fact that, you know, whether it's the NTRA, the HPPA, I know that these guys are at work doing work, right? But maybe their ability to communicate how effective that they've been is underwhelming. Now, I think also, like I said, in this period of change in the horse business, I think we're all looking around the room thinking to themselves, all right, how can we kind of create new ideas, be imaginative about how to drive the sport forward? I think it requires some new ideas, you know, and whether it is like some an initiative like this or creating new ownership opportunities or syndicate opportunities. I know Ramiro Restrepo and Clay Scherer started a syndicate where we're bringing owners over to Europe for one particular race. We buy a horse, we run it someplace and you typically wouldn't be able to run just because it's a new novel or a new kind of unique experience, right? You've got to kind of layer the positive responses to kind of move this sport forward. I know a lot of other people are doing the same thing, trying to come up with new ways to get people involved. But in doing so, right, you've got to be able to answer the tough questions that can come with pitch and horse racing.
To go to the website for a minute, I know I tweeted, you know, your visit, but if people hit on very quickly, if you happen to have your Twitter page open, you can hit lightupracing.com and kind of, you know, go through this. But the ability to, you know, be armed with a series of answers to questions, the backstory, understanding, you know, I suppose one of the things that we're remiss to do is to understand the mindset, you know, not just be dismissive of, you know, the animal activists, but understand what their, you know, what their thought process is. I mean, I know we...
Right.
Right? We
collect. Yeah, that's a tough thing to kind of overcome. You know, obviously, yeah. When people have these strong opinions, then they're pretty entrenched in it. And the way that they kind of approach the subject is can be aggressive, right? You know, just strong in whatever way. And rather than be defensive in our response, it's important to kind of, you know, sort of receive their opinion, ask them about it, be curious about it, and to kind of address it like on an actual fact-based level, right? As opposed to just getting defensive and shutting down and waving people off. And there's... So like you said, there's a way to kind of effectively communicate with people and not, like I say, you don't have to flip the script on them, but if you can just sort of change their opinion ever so slightly, then eventually they can kind of come around, especially with a network of you know, transparent information.
Well, and the first, I'm on this topic, the first guide that I would suggest people visit, and this will be the link, the direct link that I'll put out. The Science of Social Change, 6 Important Concepts. Explore the science behind social change, how individuals influence, and how behavioral insight can reshape our industry. There's a background, and under the banner, really, social reinforcement across community networks tops all else. But then complex networks change beliefs, and it shows 2 different communication matrices, essentially. A fireworks network, incredibly effective at spreading information quickly, but they won't change beliefs. Phishing networks, complex networks where information is consistently repeated between groups and is the most effective for change. Social reinforcement and redundancy. And there's graphing and explanation, trusting of the information, putting facts in people's hands, you know, who is trusted, and that, you know, that is something that there's many quarters in the industry who are, you know, trusted and as potential resources, social proof and how it matters, legitimacy, closeness, diversity, the tipping point, and then you know, how change, you know, the barrier of change, and you know, the fact that, you know, any change in any arena is a frightening proposition. So this is a highly sophisticated and professional manner, and this is something we've never had at our disposal.
I agree completely. I mean, this, you know, when she drew up these slides at the event, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to need a graduate degree to understand this. You know what I mean? But I think the information that they provided, it makes it very clear to understand. And the application of the information that they provided is very clear as well. I think it gives us the tools, or at least, you know, some of the tools to better represent ourselves and our industry, you know, in a public sphere.
What we should probably tell everybody, we've got you've got a second gathering next week.
Yes.
And let me get to that page.
What's it? It's at Keeneland on the, what day is that?
It's on the 5th, I think.
Is that right?
Yes, it is. It's the 5th coming up. I got to move around. But here we go.
I think a big part of this is going to be, you know, like I said, I'm not involved in the management over there. I think that it's important that they follow up on all the things that they're trying to do, right? Like consistently scheduling events, whether it's webinars, tutorials, or in-person, you know, meetings and lectures and stuff like that. You can't just give people the tools and then say, all right, go out and do it on your own. There's got to be follow-up, and there's got to be a continued push, which I think that, you know, people like Jason Litt, Price Bell, Dr. Berg, Vicki Leonard, these are all people that want to see this happen. So I would expect that this is not something that just kind of goes away. These guys are into it. They're, you know, committed to it.
Well, and the kickoff, how to talk to your friends about racing, that was at Phasig, as mentioned, next week on the 5th, on Monday. I take that back, Tuesday. I said the same thing yesterday. Tuesday the 5th, transforming negative opinions into positive messaging. That is going to be at Keeneland. I'm sure as the weather, spring arrives, and you know, you get a big influx, obviously, of attention with Keeneland opening, and then with Churchill and Derby, there'll be, you know, other functions. And then there's the question, we got to find out about a wider, you know, wider sessions and events elsewhere in the country, I suppose, as, you know, as the seasons, you know, reach certain venues, certain marketplaces.
Yeah, I would think so. You know, this obviously this initiative just kind of kicked off. So there's room to grow. There's room for more events. There's room for more memberships. It's something I think is kind of constantly evolving. I think that kind of fits with what they're trying to do, is right, is getting feedback and adjusting what they do to kind of see where things take them. You know, I think, again, part of the value of this to me is that they are interested in feedback from everybody, whether you're a horse player, whether you're a groom, you know, whether you're just a casual fan of the sport. There are going to be surveys put out where you can provide feedback, and the idea is just to kind of listen to where people's heads are at so that they can kind of respond and adapt to that. You know, it's being in the industry, I think that you kind of, you focus on whatever certain things apply to you specifically, right? It's tough to get an understanding of the overall public opinion. And I think, you know, the way that they're doing it with surveys and feedback, I think that kind of gives us a better understanding of where we're at overall.
Well, I can't invite and urge people enough to visit. You know, right on the front page. In fact, I want to read a couple of things that as an example of what we're up against and why this is an invaluable tool and resource. There's on the front page, there's a series of statements that are being promulgated by PETA and horse racing's wrongs and such. And here's one that would-be racehorses are forever torn from their mothers and herds as mere babies. Anybody that we would have on that has ever worked at a thoroughbred nursery knows that the mother herself will start to push the baby, push not a baby, but push the weanling away after a certain period. I mean, she knows herself when it's time for baby to move on and be and start to associate with other. I mean, so they're taking lies and they're playing on people's emotions with absolute falsehoods. And
correct.
That is what we have to counter. And so that when I hear people say, I've had so many people say to me, why are so many horses dying at Saratoga? You gotta be armed with answers and with coherent right. answers.
And I think part of that in years past has been, the fact that this information hasn't been widely available. I mean, the facts and the information has not been disseminated and spread to the industry and that's not to blame anybody. I mean, I don't know how to do that any better than anybody else, but I think that oftentimes when faced with a difficult conversation, if we don't have the necessary information to combat it, it's easier to shut down that conversation or to not address it. And in those cases, it can feel like the industry is trying to hide something, which we're not. We just don't have the skills to answer those tough questions or the information. We're in a changing world here, and we all have to be armed with facts and accuracies so that we can fight for the industry that we care about. I mean, I think the negativity outweighs the positivity so strongly. Well, I guess in news in general, right, that it's tough to kind of highlight what's good about this business. I think with facts and honesty, transparency, and accountability is the main thing that I think that we can make some changes.
Bo Bromigen with us and wanted to essentially put a spotlight on Light Up Racing, which is trying to counter ignorance and false characterizations of the game by its opponents with professional public relations tools and with knowledge and education and resources, and this is to be applauded and absolutely put in the hands of everybody who is in a position to respond and to publicize the game in a positive light. And frankly, even if you don't think of yourself as someone who is in that position, if you go through these materials, these guides and these graphics, and you'll come away, with a better understanding and feeling better about participation in the game, because I sense, Bo, that there's a malaise in part that people are feeling embarrassed to be involved in the game, and it's outrageous that anybody would make us feel that way, because it's just idiotic. I mean, no one else. People that don't have any understanding of what the industry is should not be making people feel bad about participating in it.
No, exactly. I've had conversations with them, say, what do you do? I say, I'm involved in horse racing. And they'll like tug their collar nervously. And I'm like, wait, we treat our horses so well. The mass majority of the industry does. I mean, our horses get better health care than I do. That's for sure. It's being able to show people that in a way and kind of get them into the barn and actually teach them what's actually happening is so important in this game. Previously it's been tough to communicate that through social media or whatever it is in the media. New York Times articles comes out, your individual that works on a racetrack isn't going to be able to combat a New York Times article. It's just, I mean, how do you do that?
Right.
So, like I said, kind of putting together a course of voices of fact-based information is our best way of you know, I don't know, showing the truth.
Yeah. Well, and crafting, you know, crafting survival and thriving, and you know, there.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got internal. There's mechanisms that need to be addressed internally, but then, you know, that's a separate equation.
It isn't though. I mean, we've got to be able to effectively communicate within the industry as well, right?
Yes.
So
that's true.
And not that this is like an outright battle, but there's a give and take here.
Sure.
In different elements of the game, obviously between trainers and regulators and tracks and horsemen and horse players, they're all kind of, there's an ongoing negotiation between these, I'm going to call them factions, but I don't mean it like they're separate, but different kind of interests going on. So being able to, again, communicate facts with transparency goes a long way to finding common ground and negotiation. So, you know, like you said, there are things that need to be addressed in the industry. I think these are the tools, again, that we can be used to communicate within the industry.
Well, lightupracing.com. I'll send out some links. Bo, before we go as well, and this will I'll bring in as many visits as necessary to promote this. What as the season is getting well underway here, you know, we're at the end of February already. What is the operation? The various outlets that you're involved in. What are you excited about?
Oh, well, starting off, we've got our partnership BDN.
Yeah,
we're in our sixth year of that. We've done really well. I mean, we've 6 graded stakes wins, $4 million plus in earnings. I've had horses run the Derby, the Breeders' Cup, Pegasus. Our new crop looks strong, so I'm excited for them to come up. We've got some 3-year-olds coming back and some older horses like Trademark. Two earlier, Clay Scher, Romero and I, Romero Restrepo and I, started a syndicate called Cashmere Club, where we bought a horse at Tattersall's to run on the snow in St. Moritz.
Right.
We wanted to give people a bucket list type of experience to bring new people into the game and to kind of reignite the passion for the sport. We had 84 people join us in Switzerland, which was unbelievable turnout. Unfortunately, the snow or the ice didn't freeze on the lake, so it canceled the race. But, you know, from the feedback I got to the person, I don't think anybody was upset that we didn't get a chance to run. Everybody had so much fun that I don't think anybody was disappointed at all. And then aside from that, your man Patrick Lewis and I have a couple pretty nice horses coming up this year, and we're very excited. We've got Poolside with Slim, who broke her maiden last time out,
yeah,
with high hopes for. Red Carpet Ready coming back. So we're really excited. We think we're going to have a big year.
Where's Mostache? When do we see Mo next?
Mostache is coming back. I want to say opening weekend at Keeneland.
Well,
I got to check the date. Yeah, but he's coming back in a big way.
Well, if it's Vicky, if it's Vicky Oliver, it's Keeneland.
Yeah, Vicky Oliver and Rusty Arnold, who both trained for BBN and us.
Sure.
Those guys really know how to lay it down at their home track.
That's there's a few names. McPeak, you mentioned Rusty.
Absolutely.
You mentioned.
It's such a good meet. I mean, being able to win a race there is unbelievable. You know, it's like nothing else. There's some racetracks that you definitely want to win at, Saratoga, Del Mar, but Keeneland for me is at the top of that list.
What about the Ashbrook team?
Yeah, Ashbrook, like I said, Red Carpet Ready's coming back.
Yeah.
We got some 2-year-olds coming up. We had Just a Care that ran in a stake race the other day, had a very troubled trip, lost the rider, but I think she's going to be nice through the summer. We're excited. We got some babies coming up, too. I mean, it could be a good year. Maybe I have unreal expectations, but I'm fired up.
I love it. On the out of curiosity, Weep No More. What in terms of babies? If you got babies running?
We actually sold her to Japan.
Okay.
There's a huge demand.
Oh, of course.
For top class fillies over there, and that sale had to be done.
Well, but of course, if you listen to a certain quarter in the around the world, nobody wants American bloodstock except that they do. Bo, haven't talked to you in ages, so this was fabulous, and appreciate you being a leader for a generation of participants, stakeholders, horse players, fans. Thanks for very much. Looking forward to seeing you down the road.
I appreciate you having me on. Like I say, I think I don't want to speak too much for Elijah Grayson. They know what they're doing. Reaching out to them is the best way to get the best information. I know that they're going to be obviously promoting this themselves. I'm just trying to give you my sort of opinion and feedback on what I saw the other night.
Well, and that's what got me to reach out. And so I appreciate, you've got a professional, you've got a business perspective that, I kind of in an independent view, so that you can speak for a certain cross section of industry participants. So that was my motivation.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, thanks.
Bo Bromagen, everybody. You can follow Bo on Twitter, G Bromagen, and continued success. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, sir.
Bo Bromagen, everybody, and really kind of a three-part conversation, paying tribute to Phil Oliver and catching up on the racing interests like Ashbrook and BBN and Light Up Racing. I cannot urge you enough to go look at this website, and it is really, it is as professional and as valuable an initiative, and I don't want to mention or say that any other marketing concepts have been ineffective per se, but this is a different approach. This is this is a tool-based, information-driven, fact-driven initiative to give, those of us that, want to, proactively provide answers, it gives you the tool. And there needs to be an effort to put depending on which area, which arena we're talking about, putting response tools in the hands of the various people that are participating, things that horsemen should be saying on a regular basis when they have opportunity. I'll give you an example, for instance, that was less of an initiative, but there's several horsemen who, when they would come on the show, when they visit, a lot of times when they have a chance to kind of summarize thoughts about things, they'll say certain thanks and appreciation, to owners and whoever, and recognize horse players and say, and thanks to the players, who make it possible by, creating handle that goes to purses and then to track upkeep. Jerry Hollendorfer, if you think about conversations over the years with Jerry, invariably when I would start wrapping up, or if you saw Jerry on, post-race interviews, on a regular basis, thanking horse players, that goes a long way. very, very similar thought process. Anyway, this was very good. I hope you thought that was valuable. Caitlin Free is going to join us. She's been valuable. I must admit, I did not handicap this card tonight at Turfway like we have some of the prior weeks, but Caitlin has, that's all that matters. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm down at Gulfstream and here for Fountain, never mind me. Let's let's all acknowledge the terrific job by Caitlin last week. On top, straight pick three last Wednesday. Three on top winners in a row, including the $17 winner of the feature. And her second choice in the first leg of the pick four, also a winner. And so, you know, you could have gone, I don't know, two by two by two by two or whatever. $400-plus pick four and the pick three, the straight pick three, was, I think, $60 for 50 cents. So Caitlin Free making money for listeners. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad that you are down in Florida and missed all of the hoopla weather here tonight. So that's good, at least. I'm sure you had a much better time.
Are you what's the status there? Are you guys getting clipped?
We got some pretty bad wind and some bad storms last night. It's still really windy, but everything should be okay, good to go for the night. But definitely, if you don't like storms or tornado warnings, it was an interesting evening.
It was one. Well, that's usually reserved for opening night at Churchill, the tornado warning.
That's true.
You can't,
yeah, always something.
You know what they say, you can't have opening night at Churchill without hail.
The weather there for every opening night I've seen has not cooperated a lot of times.
There's been some infield tunnel evacuations, and there's been some hairy nights. It's very funny how that but here's the good news. It comes and boy, it blows out just as quick. I'm going to be honest, I'm going to have to turn this over to you. I'll be able to talk about the Battaglia and the Cincinnati Trophy on Friday night, but okay. We'll do that in a minute. I'll turn things over to you tonight. Let me at least pull up. A quick sheet at DRF, and so I know what you're talking about. But how about some ideas for this Wednesday card?
Yeah, pretty typical type of Wednesday night for Turfway. We've got a couple starter allowances. We've got a really good maiden for the three-year-old fillies. And then we've got a couple allowance optionals that are going to be the headliners in races 7 and 8. Race number 4, we have a 4-5 morning line favorite in here, Proto Magic, which the odds-on favorites did not fare well last week. So I don't know if that's going to continue or not, but I think she really stands out versus this group. So if you want to get creative in there, there's maybe a horse that's going to try to go coast to coast in there, the 6 Yoga Queen. But if you watched last week on Saturday, we'll have to see how it changes tonight with there kind of being some rain to wash things around a little bit. Speed was not holding at all on Saturday, so definitely something to just think about as we go into tonight. Maybe, you know, give a couple of races and see kind of a feel of how the track's going to play. So that race could really go either way depending on how the track's playing, but definitely a really, really cool main special weight in race number 5 here. There's some big purchases, big time connections. Almost every filly in this race except for the favorite, which is Silk, or Brad Cox, who's been about 6-5, 7-5 in both of her starts here, and she's been 5th and 2nd. So it's her and the first time starters.
Interesting. Yeah. Silk 4-1 with Concepcion. And you got to look outside for some of the. That's interesting, actually. The next set of prices. Well, where's the wine for Catman? 6-1 on the rail. And then you've got to look outside, 5-1. She's Always Rosie from Bill Morey, Beyond Lucky, Jonathan Thomas, Ty Connor, 6-1 on Maymay Strong, Steve Asmussen, and Ultimate Ready is 5-1 for Paulo Lobo. So I tell you, it's kind of interesting in itself. You've got six horses that are between 4-1 and 6-1, and then you've got six horses that are 12-1 to 20-1.
It's unreal, and I really had to – I spent probably about an hour on that this race alone, just kind of thinking about it and how to tackle it. But I'm going to go with a price in here. I looked at the four that's Thunder Song in here for Reina Gonzalez. She's over five this meet, but a lot of her career wins have came here at Turfway Park, and she is two for her last three when it comes to first-time starters. She doesn't get – first time starters a lot. She's kind of a little bit more of a claiming trainer, but she does really, really well at Turfway Park. And when she gets horses that are this caliber, they usually fire in these types of main special weight races, and they do well at first asking. The horse has been training at the training center and is by Mendelsohn, and they handle the surface really, really well. And the dam has only produced one other foal. That foal won on debut and is also a winner over the all weather. Good percentage as well between her and Fernando de la Cruz. I think I may even get bigger than 12-1 with some of these other connections in this race. So I'm gonna take a long shot here with that one.
Very nice. All right, the four. Thunder's Strong, Fernando de la Cruz aboard. You look at the late pick four, and it starts with a eight-horse non-winners of two lifetime for 15, but then a pair of very nice $74,000 first level allowances, one that mile and a quarter that we laugh about, that is a regular feature of the condition book for Tyler Picklesheimer, and then a 1 mile for the fillies and mares. This is a quality double between the seventh and eighth.
It is. And in the first version of it, the mile and a quarter race, which a lot of the usual suspects are in here, but there's one horse I've been really waiting to come back, and that was the 12 Miracle on Ice. He was also eligible in a race like this previously, and then he ended up getting into one of the races. I believe it's been about 10 days ago when we canceled, when the weather conditions got horrible. It was snowy. The vision was bad. I had him picked that night, too. So this is the rescheduled version of that, where we canceled a couple Wednesdays ago. I believe it was 2 weeks ago today that we ended up having that cancellation. So Miracle on Ice, he's taking on winners for the first time, but he had an extended break. He was off for 9 months, and he came back into Turfway and broke his maiden first asking of his five-year-old season. He had a couple of races here. Some of his best career races did come at Turfway, and they came going a mile and a quarter. He was second twice in there, once to Ford Relations and then once to Blue Devil. So I think he's always wanted to go longer than a mile and a 16th, and he's already got that type of substance in him over the surface. And we talked about it at the Hughes Barn right now, 3 for 6 has just been kind of knocking it out of the park there. Sonny Leone has been a great addition since he's come back. So I'm going to give this horse a big chance at 4-1 because there's some other horses in here that are going to be short prices, like Global Sensation, Presider. I don't trust them as a favorite. And Miracle on Ice, just a fresh face, and I know he wants to go this distance.
Well, it's too bad that Miracle on Ice couldn't have run the other day when it was the anniversary of the Miracle on Ice.
Right.
That would have been like when Valentine Candy ran the other day around Valentine's Day. But Miracle on Ice, well within parameters of the U.S. Olympic hockey team's win over the Soviet Union in 1980.
Yeah, it's close enough. It's close enough.
It is close enough, definitely. What about the fillies and mares going the flat mile?
A little bit of starch came out of this race. Not really anybody that was, you know, I gave a super big look to, but the 2, the 9, 11, 13, and 14 are all out. I don't like the favorite here, 2-1 on Curl Girl. She's stretched out before and she's won at the distance on the dirt, but she's just kind of got spotty form in general. And she did not run well at all here. She just kind of looked like she didn't really get a hold of the surface. She broke really poorly. So I didn't like what I saw from her when she went up against Pumpkin Scone and Nurse Kringle Dances. So I'm going to give her a fade up there at 2-1. But the two I really looked at, I looked at the 7 Candle for Cherie DeVoe. Comes in for the Shug McGahee barn, but is now with Cherie. And horses do really well for her first time out. They do really well off of a little bit of a layoff. This horse race last at the beginning of November at Aqueduct for Shug. And she's just kind of really taken on a lot of better competition. She's raised into Be Your Best, Kijira, 30th Out Kelvin, Breath Away. And she ran into a lot of those horses in one trial in the all-weather at Gulfstream, which is a very similar surface to what we have. Same distance, too, and she ran a really good third. So I think she's going to handle this surface well. She's been training here for a couple of months, and I like the way horses run first time out for Cherie. Also gets the Axeman aboard, certainly nothing bad with that. And then a little bit of a price is the 4 Tag Team. One thing that Shaf and I have kind of discovered, and I've thought about it for the past couple of years, is unless you're like a really, really high-level stakes horse, horses coming in from Woodbine don't really run well here the first time that they run. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's because the surfaces are different, which they are a little bit, or what, but it's just something that really is not a good stat for them. So this horse ran once. It was her first time stretching out. She almost dropped Gerardo Corrales on the far turn. Ended up clipping heels a little bit, so just kind of faded back. But Tag Team, this is going to be your second start of the all-weather, second start going the two-turn distance, and Julian Leperu is in town tonight, going to be picking up some mounts here this week. So I ended up giving her a shot at 12-1.
So 7-4 for Caitlin in the eighth, the one-mile first-level allowance. And this is a good group. I understand Curl Girl being the favorite, but there's a few that are well within shouting distance. Just kind of thumbing through. I'm looking at Thoroughgraph out of curiosity about who may be sitting on a forward move. And you know, Cherie is good first off the layoff, first off, you know, the first acquisition, because she, you know, she reads them the Riot Act. If they're gonna be in this barn, you better live up to potential. Exactly. Cherie has that rule for humans and equine alike.
That's why I love her.
No nonsense. You don't want to be on the receiving end of that, Caitlin.
Trust me, she can handle her business. I love that woman.
You know, you mentioned Sonny Leone. He's on that that Felipe Salas horse, Birdie Rose, a big price, and that last effort, just on a fig basis, is kind of jumps out at me a little bit, and a big price. Interesting.
Yeah, she should definitely be really, really close to, and she's handled the all weather really well since she's got here. Yeah, that was a big, big step forward for her running
she got
that well behind when the dog breaks.
She got, how is she 20-1 in here?
I don't know.
I'm using the eight, folks. Birdie Rose, broker maiden, first time synthetic, and then stretched out to a mile and a quarter and got beat half length.
And behind a legitimate horse for Brad Cox, like a really nice allowance quality horse. So, and you know, Sonny Leone can obviously have patient rides on horses. I think he's actually a really good fit for her now that I look at it.
All right. I'm famous for tossing him in, you know, here and there. And this is a horse that's got tactical speed. Birdie Rose. That's me.
That's a good one.
All right. Anything else?
I don't think so for tonight. We can go ahead and maybe flip over to the Cincinnati Trophy on Friday.
Go ahead.
All right, let me find it here. Race number race number 6.
8:25 Eastern. Full field.
All right. Skimming it a little bit here. Sistina Chapel going to be trying the all weather for the first time. She's got some Oaks points already. Third in the Untappable behind Alpine Princess, third behind West Omaha in the Silver Bullet Day. So definitely a little interesting there. Living Magic, 3-1. She is a stakes winner at Woodbine over the all-weather, won the My Dear Girl Stakes. She won the Chelsea Flower at Aqueduct last time out, but is coming in off of a little bit of a layoff since October for the Phil Schoenthal barn. He doesn't ship in here that often. I heard about this filly coming a couple of weeks ago. So I'm definitely really interested in her. Barbatina for Brad Cox. She broke her maiden at Ellis. Ran decent behind Dazzling Dictator as the favorite last time out. Dazzling Dictator, I think, is a really, really nice filly. She has now won her last two races, so unbeaten here at Turfway, both going two turns. She broke her maiden and won that allowance optional where Barbatina was second. Everland, I think she's more than earned her place amongst these. She ran in a maiden 30, and it was kind of the famous maiden 30 where she checked and almost dumped Axel Concepcion and ran on in spite of herself despite everything. And then last time out, I don't know how we almost got her at 16-1 against some of these other fillies that are in here, but she just poured it on and she keeps passing every test. So Viscountess is back again. We have a 5-2 shot on the also eligible Impel for Brad Cox at Broker Maiden Fairgrounds, coming in out of a pretty live race in there. So this is a really good race, but we also have a lot of horses that have never ran here before.
Well, it leads in, of course, to the Bourbonnet Oaks, $150,000 for the trophy. And does this have Oaks points?
Yes, it's 20 Oaks points.
There we go. So that explains a few inclusions here, including Sistina mm-hmm. Chapel. We talked to McPeak the other day and got some details when he won his 2,000th race, which, of course, happened right there in front of everybody. Let's turn to Saturday evening, 8:25 post as well for the Battaglia. And got some heavy heads that are showing up here, but the local terror, John Anus, epic ride. The Blame Colt buried him in the Leonidas and obviously was going to be favored, even though there's a few, you know, nice horses signed on and showing up in here. Some thoughts?
I'm actually a little bit surprised that, knowing John Anus, I'm not, but just thinking about it, I'm a little surprised that Epic Ride didn't maybe skip this race and go to the
Wait for the Ruby.
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit surprised. He's done a lot at one time, but I mean, really the key to having horses ready for the Triple Crown, if that's the step you want to take, is getting them runs. So I guess it's kind of a double-edged sword, but I was actually kind of surprised to see him in here. He's obviously the horse to beat, has stretched out very, very well, proved that, you know, that was no problem. We've got some horses coming up from Oaklawn, Gettysburg Address for Brad Cox, mm-hmm. Rain on the Street Pen, Rain on the Smarty Jones. Some locals, Bold at Midnight, Mr. Faversham. Brad Cox has got a pretty heavy hand in here. He's got Fidget in here, too. Mentioned the horse on the rail. He's got Encino. And then, yeah, he's got three or four of them in here, which more power to him. He's trying to beat this six. The horse that actually ran second to Epic Ride and the Leonidas is back in here, too. Triple Crown nominated Blue Eyed George. For Michael McCarthy, we got a Safi Shipper coming up from Gulfstream. Ran second in a race all over the all-weather. And then broke his maiden on the turf under Ocean Murphy. He's going to try the all-weather here, switching back over surface-wise. Good Bali, also Triple Crown nominated for Rusty Arnold. I thought that it was interesting that they nominated that horse to the Triple Crown. Definitely something I took note of. And then Encino coming back. He ran pretty well to break the maiden. Last out was a good second after getting wired when he was left at the starting gate. So this is a pretty deep race, but I think when you look at the numbers and figures, I mean, it's obvious that nobody really is that close to Epic Ride.
Well,
Bold at Midnight, maybe.
I mean, Encino's presence is the interesting element here in terms of pace mm-hmm. pressure and the fact that he drew outside, because otherwise there really isn't any obvious, you know, pace pressure. I guess Bold at Midnight, you know, broke the maiden on the front end, but isn't necessarily a pace player. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Ode to Balius presses a little bit. I don't know. I mean, Epic Ride feels like the controlling speed. And so.
Which is what he wants in here, and he's already turned away more than half this group. And I just, there's not really anybody that looks close to him on paper. And as you mentioned, you know, he should be able to get the type of lead he wants in here, whether he gets pressed. I'm not 100% sure, but he's got a really quick tune up at the training center, 47.3, fastest of 46 works that morning just a couple of days ago. So he looks like he is sitting on go again.
Caitlin Free is always sitting on go, and she's ready at a moment's notice. Caitlin, I appreciate it. Enjoy the week, and we'll talk to you from Tampa next week.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Enjoy Florida.
I appreciate it. Caitlin Free, everybody, and we'll see if Caitlin can't hit it again after a terrific job last week. A couple of good ideas there, and I'm chipping in with the 8 and the 8th. As at least an include for some value. Let's close out what's been a busy morning with Seth. And I wasn't all that worried about cutting Seth short today because Seth is on his way here tonight. I know it's very exciting. Seth, there's nothing more exciting in racing than Seth Merrow on the road. It's something special. The fans go wild. He joins us now, Seth. There's a banner up already. Welcome, Seth Merrow.
The fans go wild. I like that.
They do. I don't say, you know, I've made it now a habit, you know, Seth Merrow 2 on Twitter, but number 1 in your heart.
Don't storm the track. No track storming.
Thank you. I brought that up earlier today. We don't have to deal with that like they do in college basketball. One thing in racing that has not has not happened yet. I thought I'd spend a couple of minutes with you, but I mean, you're going to be sitting here in person for the big Friday, the big Friday Fountain of Youth preview. Very exciting.
Yeah, looking forward to getting down later tonight and then start working on TV, doing a little shooting, pre-tape some stuff tomorrow, and then we're live on the air. 8:30 on Friday morning, 8 o'clock on Saturday. And are you going to come over and sit in on Saturday?
That's the only reason I came.
Okay, perfect.
I can't leave you out there by yourself. Are you unveiling a fabulous tropical apparel outfit?
No. There will be no unveiling. Because I'm a bad packer, I have to admit. And so it's pretty. Yeah, it's. I don't have a whole array of options.
Well, you know, you could pull out some of your pastels and stuff that, you know, it's South Florida. There's a certain.
No, you're right. But you don't want your pastels to be like your only option. And so I don't bring that many options.
It's true. Your apparel, your closet, there's various shades of meatloaf color.
I don't know if that's. I'm big on the. I will admit, I'm big on the light blue Oxford. I will readily admit that. I don't know if that's meatloaf, but conservative.
Certainly, the sports coats. There's a certain mottled sort of grayish. Let's be fair. I mean, there's a grayish tone to all those sport coats are. They don't pop, let's be honest.
Oh, well, I'll go with they don't pop necessarily. I got a couple of houndstooths and a couple of seersucker. I pull off a seersucker a couple of times every summer.
That's true. And you are resplendent in seersucker.
I don't mesh your seersucker summertime outfit, but I try.
Well, it's funny you say that. I think I am wearing a. I think I am. I think the blue and white. Not my. You know what a certain generation of clothes horse would identify as a Haspel suit. But I am. I think you are going to see the blue and white seersucker jacket. on Saturday.
And you also have the white bucks, but supposedly they don't go after Labor Day. But if you're in South Florida, can you do away with the date thing?
You know what? This is not a market to wear those. You need something a little bit more fashion oriented. I've got a pair of blue summer bucks that I almost brought, but I'm on the road for these next 6 weeks, so I had to be very judicious about what I took, and so I went very light on footwear. So I've got a pair of Bally loafer type. The North Star on some of this, maybe it's a little bit too out far flung, but Michael Averone, I would, we'll start with Michael on one end and you on the other.
I probably would agree. I'm 180 degrees away from him.
I couldn't resist. Well, we're going to have fun. Last year that was so much fun doing it. I was surprised at how good I was, actually. Because you're on TV year round. I said this the other day. I mean, I'm not allowed on television all that much. I mean, basically, you know, 6 episodes of Loose on the Lead a year.
I told you you can come down any Sunday you want during the rest of the year, but you're not in town half of the time.
Well, yeah, it's hard, and I'm not going to be in town much going forward. In fact, I was looking at the summer schedule. I forget it. It's lost. It's already locked in. So, are you? You wouldn't come to Tampa either, right? When was the last time you were in Tampa?
Well, I just heard you say you're headed over there, and I thought, man, I am envious. I would love to get over there. It's a great question. I mean, it's been a while since I've been over there. It's really one of my favorite tracks.
I know, poor Derby Lane. No Derby Lane for you.
No, and Sarasota Kennel Club. Yeah,
that's sad. That's brutal, actually. Yeah. Well. Let me, we got about 4 minutes. Let's get some plays from you. What, little Tampa, little Gulfstream?
Yeah, do a little Tampa. No TV today because I'm going to be on a jet plane in a couple hours. But the picks are up on the Capital TV website for Tampa and Gulfstream. But I'll take, a look at the late pick 4 at Tampa. It's kind of fun. And I went through the scratches, and there really aren't, in the last sequence, there really aren't any. The 3 scratched out of the 6th race, but other than that, they seem to be clean at this point. Yeah. They're on the turf.
Real quick.
I'll go 3 by 4 by 4 by 2. In the first race, 2, 1, 6, and 4, I'm going to use Betsy Licious on top. Nice win in the debut, then sat off a while, came back and tried a stakes race, gets back to the proper condition. Second slot, Managing Mischief, who might wind up being the one to beat. The race 2 back, the maiden breaker, was very good. But again, this one also tried a stake, gets back to the proper condition. I thought Corinth was a player as well. Plenty of experience, only the 1 win, but I think fits with this group. So I have 2, 1, 6, and 4, but I'm going to use the 2, 1, and the 6. I'm going to go 4 deep in the next leg. I have it 9, 4, 2, and 8. Long Branch Lou on top. B Jersey is a sire to keep your eyes on. Mm-hmm. I kind of picked up on him the past couple of months. And this horse almost lived up to its 7-1 in debut. We're not going to get the 7-1 today because of that, but I thought this one was interesting. There was a sibling called Ready for the Lady. Took 7 starts to win, but was a good second in debut. And when the horse did break its maiden, it came back in the very next start, won the Grade 3 Singspiel up at Woodbine. So that was a little bit of breeding to live up to. The interesting horse here is Memories Are Magic by Union Rags. Five starts hasn't really done a whole lot yet, but the first couple of starts of the career were okay. And you look at the breeding, by winter memories, you know, the Diana winner back in, 2012. Siblings are a mixed bunch, but I thought the horse was interesting at what could be a big price. Mungo is a little bit playable as well off the debut effort and then return to Tampa today. And King Miano, last few starts. I didn't want to leave that one out of the mix. So, again, 9, 4, 2, and 8 in the eight. Again, I'll go 4 deep, 8, 5, 7, and 10. Number 8 is always connected, comes in off a nice win last time to break the maiden. Took 24 starts to do it, but sometimes they figure it out. This one took a while. I'm going to look for this one to perhaps repeat. Princess Tanko looks good on the move from the turf last time. I think better on the dirt. My First Date hasn't been seen since early in December. But if the horse comes back ready to roll, could be interesting. The workouts are kind of a mixed bag, but I think could be okay. And then number 10, Lovely Drama at a big price. The maiden breaker two back was pretty good. Got a little experience at this level last time. It's Kathleen O'Connell. I didn't want to leave it out at a price. So again, 8, 5, 7, and 10. And then I'll just go 2 deep in the finale. I have it 7, 4, 6, and 2. But I'm going to use the 7 and the 4. Zat Tip, I thought was a little bit interesting from Graham Motion. 5-2 on the morning line, and the horse to beat is going to be QF75. But I thought maybe a little more recency and Graham Motion. I'll use the 7 on top, and then QS74, the morning line favorite, is logical in here. So, again, we'll go 2 deep in that last leg, 7 and 4.
Here it is, 1-2-6 with 2-4-8-9 with 5-7-8-10 with 4-7. 1-2-6 with 2-4-8-9. 5-7-8-10 and 4-7, 3x4x4x2, $48. Seth, safe travel. I will see you tomorrow, and looking forward to it.
I am as well. Good luck to everybody today, and yeah, see you tomorrow.
Seth Merrill, folks, and Capital OTB, the one and only, and he'll be here live. We'll do a Friday thing. I assume he'll be off the air before noon. Thanks to Seth. Thanks to Caitlin Free, of course, and the action tonight at Turfway. And they've got a big weekend with Battaglia Saturday and the trophy on Friday night. Bo Bromagin and Light Up Racing, really something exciting and something that can really help the game. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Dave Grenning stopped by. We did the Hall of Fame release. And Dick Powell as well. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Back with you here live at Gulfstream tomorrow as we inch closer to Found the Youth Day. A lot to go over on that 14-race card. I went through it on the flight yesterday, actually. Good luck. I'll talk to you in the morning.
PA Bread, I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Carabelle in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none. The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
Racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Breeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Breeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-68.